Welcome to the Undraped Artist Podcast. You should know that this episode was also recorded in video and can be watched on our website at theundrapedartist.com and also on YouTube at the Undraped Artist Podcast. Also, check out our show notes to learn more about today's guest. I hope you enjoy the show. Daoud Akhrib, welcome to the Undraped Artist Podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Huge fan. I've been following you for a while, and your work is extraordinary. I just wanted to tell you that right off the bat, which is why I have you on the show. I want to learn more about you. So tell me where you're from.
So I'm from southwest of what is Russia right now. Then it was the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. and the republic was called Chechen Ingush Republic. I'm Ingush part of that.
Wait, say that again.
Chechens.
Oh, Chechens. Okay, gotcha.
They are my cousins. So, and I'm Ingush. So I'm from southwest, which was Soviet Union then. Now it's Russia. So, and then I was studying in art school when I was a kid, since age, I would say it was probably 7 when I started.
7 years old?
Yeah, we had a good program then in Soviet Union when they would test the kids for certain talents. Mm-hmm. So I got into this grade school run by Nikolai Zhukov, which was absolutely incredible. I would say probably in my memory will be one of the best teacher you actually can have. You can get lucky sometime in your life. And then that was, I actually got lucky with my teachers. That was my beginning. Then I went to the college for 4 years.
I don't want to skim over that, because that's so different than the United States. I want to talk a little bit more about that. So at 7 years old, were you tested or something? Or do people, are your teachers around you just say, hey, that kid's good at art, let's put him in a different program? I don't really understand how that works.
So there was this incredible school run by this guy, Nikolai Zhukov. Mm-hmm. He opened the school, which was a building built by one of the English oil barons. But after the revolution 1917, the communist revolution, they all fled. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't take the buildings with them. So that building became the art school.
And okay.
That was the beginning of understanding how good things are made. What is art is combination of the craft and ideas. So, and this guy, this is the way he saw it. If you walk in, you walk into the building of the arts, the creation. So, and yes, we were tested. It was a drawing test one day.
Next were you day, tested in a public school, or were you, did your parents send you to this art school and have the art school test you?
Yeah, the art school completely separate. Your parents take you there.
Oh, your parents take it. Okay, gotcha.
So first day was, like I said, drawing, then painting, and third day was a composition. They give you an idea, mm-hmm. and you have to execute a painting.
At 7 years old?
Yeah.
What? You're kidding me.
But they... I think all art forms were set like that, and sports also, I would say.
Yeah, it's true. I guess in the U.S., kids are playing violin at 3 years old and sports at 3 years old. That's a good point. Yeah.
So at that time, my mother had no idea that I was a year too young to go there. Mm-hmm. But my test was, well, my tests were good enough that the director of the school says, when he saw documents, he says he have to wait 1 year. He's in, but have to wait 1 year. But for him not to waste time, if you don't mind, bring him. He will walk with the students, because at 8 you can start there. So I was a little too young. And he allowed me to be in the school, study with everybody, Yale. And then I started 4 years program after that. Yeah.
So did you continue to go to a regular school? I mean, I don't know what a regular school looked
Yes.
like in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went to both at the same time.
8 to 1, I was in one school, and 3 times a week from 3 to 6, I was in a school just for arts.
And what kind of stuff did they have you do at 8 years old?
In the beginning was they were teaching you a perspective, and that you
Like
have to
linear
draw.
perspective.
Yes, and then how to draw a simple forms like cube, a ball, and a pyramid, and it should stay on place like it's solid, you know. Then after that, it transformed into and everything was done in graphite because they considered that the other materials, soft materials, have certain effect which easy to fake stuff. With graphite, when you draw with graphite pencil, you really have to technically be able to execute it right. So,
Right.
and they explain, you know, how do you work with the shadows, with a light, you know, how to bring stuff how to the focal point. And the painting class was watercolor because the watercolor is the hardest media. If you made a mistake, you have to start a new
So they're
watercolor.
thinking, is the logic that if you start with the hardest, then the easiest will be a breeze?
Yes.
Really? That's an interesting philosophy. That makes sense.
But if you check the paintings of like Anders Zorn and the Sargent and the how good they were with watercolors, it tells you they went through the same thing. I don't think that was something new our school invented, our system in the Soviet Union. Because when I saw watercolors of Anders Zorn, who is very flashy painter, right? He's a huge broad brushstrokes. But when you see his earlier works, and there's the watercolors, it is absolutely so tight and precise. So he already knew every little thing, and then when he become a master, it shows that he knew where to, you know, kind of jam your brush, where to release the brush stroke, but everything was to the point. So that's a system.
Okay, so you start with basic forms, perspective, then you move into watercolor. What kind of subject matters did they allow in
Most
watercolor?
they will set the still lifes with the objects like transparent object or shiny object, several cloth, different relationship that we like different reds that you will learn how to manipulate your colors on the palette, show different shades. So this was during the year, and then gradually they will increase complexity of the subjects and objects. And in the summer, when there was a summer break, because we had a summer 3 months summer break in the regular school, from June till September, we will have a 2 months a plein air course. So to go to paint in nature, because you deal with interior, that the colors are more soft, you know, it's diffused. When you're under the sunlight, the contrast is much stronger and the colors are more vivid. So you have to deal with that. And it also refreshes your eye. So that was a pattern. You will have a 2 months of summer course, a plein air. And in fact, for first week, he will take all greens from us, will mark them, whose greens those are, put them in the box. And then you deal with the greens outside in the summer, right? So then after the first week, he will give you back the greens, because before you have to manipulate that to create that type of green, and later on you can put some punch in. So that was an idea that you actually have to mix the color, because you know green looks green, but it has so many different shades, right? You know, and then you know when you see the mountains, some amateurs will start knowing that there's a mountain is covered with trees, they will start with green. So but aerial change. So that stuff was explained early on, and then it sits you in the head for a while.
So did they have you make sure that you mastered, not mastered, but did they make sure you're proficient in drawing before you got into paint, or did they do it all at one time, drawing and painting? I mean, aside from the perspective.
Same time, they will play it all, and I love that. I have a strong disagreement with the schools where they say you draw first, and then no, you put those two together constantly, and sometimes intentionally they will put you in uncomfortable situation with bringing you a very complicated object or subject, and you lost in the beginning, but you deal with that, and suddenly, oh, okay, I got it now. So, and then it goes. And then there was a critique. Not I would say by the Western standards, maybe it was a bit rough because they were no compliments. You know, it's critique is a critique to help you to improve what you do. So, but for us, it was already normal when you grew up like that. That's so.
So
But
they're pretty brutally honest with you when they
yes.
critiqued you.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and
But
that
what happens
particular.
when you had success? Did you get any praise, or was it just usually critique and no praise?
There would be praise.
There was.
There would be praise because we were winning so many competitions around the world. In fact, two
Around the
times I.
world.
Yeah, two times I, because they are competition of the children's drawings and paintings around the world. In fact, two times I brought them a gold medal, and there were some other guys also. We had plenty of brass to play with. And so he knew. I tell you how great he was because that country was it was Iron Curtain round, right? We and the cities were closed. Moscow and Saint Petersburg were maybe more or less open. Leningrad was then, and they said not Saint Petersburg. And we had the delegations from Japan, England, France. He was well-known teacher.
No kidding.
Yes.
What an opportunity. That's amazing.
Oh, I would say in my memories, in the school I've been, that just still like I was thinking if I ever open something that probably I would like to do, maybe older one, but I don't know if it's,
Is
but
it possible in America, though? And here's why I ask, because maybe my perception of youth is all wrong. I don't know. But the youngest student I've ever had in my atelier is 13. And she was, that's not true, 12. 12. So I had a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old. Usually, though, before 16 or 17, my experience is they can't stay focused. They just want to have fun. And they like if I were to teach them real, if I were to be real academic with them and have them do actual exercises and disciplined routines, they just are bored out of their minds. They go home and they tell their parents, "This isn't fun. I don't want to do it anymore." You know, and I can't imagine having a 7 or 8 year old. And I don't know if that's cultural or if I'm wrong. If maybe there are more kids like that in America. What are your thoughts on that?
well, it is a complicated issue to talk about, but I would say something where is a discipline is probably should be forced a little. You know, Niccolo Paganini wouldn't be a virtuoso if it wasn't for his father who will lock him up and force him to play violin. And then there's this incredible myth of Niccolo Paganini is virtuoso, where people after the concert sometime will commit to suicide being that much, you know, emotionally involved, right?
So you think the parents, it's possible that parents are saying, "Hey, get your butt to soccer and football. Get your butt to violin and piano practice." But when it comes to art, parents are like, "No, just have fun. You don't need to discipline." So do you feel like it's on the parents more than the kids?
The kids can complain, but to me, I it would be hard to answer because I couldn't wait to get there, and the time was passing too
So
fast for me.
you didn't need motivation from your parents. You didn't need to be compelled.
No, I was anytime like this. I in fact, I didn't like my school. I like my art school. That was the thing I was living for. So this was. And I'm telling you, I was walking into the Art Nouveau building. You know, imagine you walking into the Butler House, like in Barcelona, right? And you think, well, this is my school. So that's the way it was. I'm not saying that it was worse or better. It was exactly that every line was. And for example, when teacher need to explain to you about certain aesthetics, all they will just point something, look at this window. And that window, how the line bends in the beginning and then slowly gets straight and then goes again. And nothing was straight. Everything is mahogany doors with incredible inlays, and like everything was aesthetically so well done. You live in an art building.
So who paid for this? Was this a country run or federally run school?
State run. The parents did pay, but it was, I would say, if you would say how much your parents paid for the school, if you take out the salaries, compared to salaries, I would say it was quarter of the month's salary of my mom.
A quarter.
Yeah, a year, in a year. It's for the whole year.
Okay, the whole year was a quarter of 1 month, or?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was really inexpensive then.
Yes, because the rest was a state paid.
So what was the motivation for the state? Did they feel like there was some advantage to the state to have all these trained artists? I mean, or was
Yeah,
it?
then they were like, for example, imagine we're talking about Cold War. Two systems were saying, I'm better than you, you are better. I'm the other one, constantly. The two countries, we lived in the Cold War. The Soviets probably were trying to prove that we are better,
So,
as you
okay, so
would.
they're basically building a portfolio of
Yes,
people.
yeah. But also, if you care about your country, this what you do. I mean,
Yeah.
so your best should be shown how good it is, and rest pull yourself up, and so yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, I mean, love it or hate it, Russians have produced some of the best artists alive. I mean,
Yeah.
there's something to it.
But it is that when you look at this period, there's absolutely incredible period. But if you look how it all evolved, like, I'm not talking about, you talk about, you can start from cave drawings, then you can say Egyptians, then the Greeks, those two parallels go. Then, the Romans came, this absolutely incredible. And then we went to Dark Ages, but even in Dark Ages, there were beautiful stuff
Yeah.
made. And there's a Renaissance. You talk about Italy, you talk about Holland, Germany, France, all went. And then it came into Russia. And right now, I would say next century, we will see absolutely incredible explosion. And we already see it in China.
Yeah. In China.
So
Oh,
that will
yeah.
continue. Yeah, that thing continues. It's if somebody didn't. That's the way my teacher told me, and I completely agree with him.
No, it's
You are.
obvious. I mean, it seems obvious anyway that art sort of moves from place to place, and everyone sort of gets their day in the sun eventually.
The point of that's what I always liked when I was growing up, and it's hard to see right now how people are divided. My teachers were saying, you are building block for next one to step up in the world, not in your country, in the world. That was the mentality of
Really?
my best teachers. They never talk about certain ethnicity or something that was.
So on one hand, the state is saying, here's all these resources so we can build up the best artists in the world. But on the other hand, your teachers are saying, you're a building block to the world as a whole. It seems like a contradiction. The state wants you to make Russia look good or the Soviet Union look good. But your teachers are saying, no, you're part of the bigger picture. You're part of the world as a whole.
Yeah, but when they give you examples of the great art, you talk about Leonardo, Holbein, Chinese, the Japanese aesthetic and everything, they were open. The communists run their system for their own reasons, but the rest of the people, the country, live the way they lived before.
Okay.
If you see somebody absolutely incredible, which fits into your idea of your painting, and that person is German or Chinese or Taiwanese, you never will think twice,
No, of
right?
course it doesn't matter, right?
So, but I
Yeah.
say that the whole thing started with my first grade teacher, is actually a little bit earlier than that. And she noticed what I was doing because we had a drawing class. And she came to my parents and said, just after the school, and my parents were thinking, well, what did he do in the school today? I was first grade. And she says, the guy has a talent. After class, you guys are working, I'll take him home. He will do the homework and then he will draw. And in the evening, I'll bring him home, you know, to your house. You don't worry about him. So that was my life in the first grade. So,
okay. So that brings up another question. So what, when, if I was in the first grade, okay. So when I was in the first grade, I had similar responses from fellow students and teachers. They saw that I could draw and I would be doodling in class and everyone seemed a little impressed. And, but in our culture, it was like, no, art is a hobby. You don't make, you can't make a living on art. Focus on your academics. No one would have ever said this kid should be doing art in our culture. So in your culture, why is it, what is it about art that made it a viable option?
Well, you know, it's interesting that in Soviet Union, I don't know what it is about Russia right now. I can tell you that. When you say, I want to be an artist, it's probably like in the US, if your kid will say, I want to be a lawyer or a doctor.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The schools were set for that. And it was also a great pay. You know, they were not struggling. There's a strong art union, which sometimes you have a mural to execute or something, and then, but they will give you a studio. If you had, for example, one national show and two regional shows, you will be given art studio for free.
So what's the source of income though? Are you working for the state or are you working for private collectors?
Both.
Both. Yeah. But you're pretty much, if you're really good and you go through this training, and you're recognized enough to get your own studio, does that mean that you can pretty much count on the state supporting you enough to keep a living going, and then all the private commissions are just icing?
Yeah.
No kidding.
If you're really working, yes, that's always, you know, always was a pattern, yeah.
So what was your experience? Well, actually, no, I don't want to go to that yet. I got to back up a little bit because you had said something earlier that I really want to flesh out because I want to learn from you. And I'm going to be completely frank. One of the things you said you disagreed with is something that I'm adamantly passionate about. So, but I'm open to learning and changing my mind. So I want to hear more about it. And that is that you said that you feel really strongly that you should learn to paint and draw at the same time. See, yes. I've always been of the mindset that if you can't draw, you can't paint. So you might as well focus on drawing until you can draw and then paint. So I'd love to hear more about that. Why is it that you feel strongly about that? And maybe you can change my mind.
The drawing teaches you how to see everything in perspectives, the shapes and everything, right?
Right.
But then there's depth you create. It's an all tonal. Mm-hmm. Depth also exists in color. It has as much complexity as the shapes and tone.
Right.
So you put those two constantly together, and those two improve together. And that's why the hardest one was taking two hardest things to draw only in graphite.
Like when you say draw only, do you mean without value or tone? Just learning proportion?
No. With the tone and value, yes, yeah.
Oh, tone as well, okay.
Using only graphite.
Okay.
Only graphite. They teach you how to sharpen the pencil. There was a long cone. If you want to, and the reason for that, if you do a tonal, you can put your pencil flat, because if you have a long graphite piece sticking out as a cone, you go tonal. And that's where you walk with the shadows, because shadows are quiet, you go with a tone. When you go towards the light, you have the sharp needle type pencil tip, which you go crosshatch. And that's the explanation, even in the sounds. When a sound is dull, but then you want to put accent, you put vibration. So this is those two together. So this was explanation how to create the form.
So you're drawing, you're shading in the shadows with the side of the pencil point.
Yes.
And then one, as you move into the lights, you start to turn up to the point and hatch.
Yeah. And the most important is that line between the shadow and the light, where you cross hatch stronger, because
You
and
mean the
then the
core
switch back.
shadow, or you mean the core shadow?
You know, you have a shadow and you have a light, and you have a the line is running, connecting those two. So and that's why you put the cross hatch stronger, because the suddenly light gets through. So then you get to the painting. So and the explanation is that there's a color, right? And let's say light is coming from the side. Your red shirt is exposed. So and then how to create it? They say, okay, only true color you see of the object is right beside the line of the shadow and the light. Because light takes away color because it's so strong. It's
Right, it kind
strong.
of bleaches it out.
Shadow bleached it out, yes. Shadow also put it in the shadow takes away. True color where the light is indirect. So this is a true color of the object. So that's why they were putting those
So
two together.
just to be clear, so like I'm looking at my shirt right now, so like the half tones, like maybe like right in here.
Yes.
Okay,
Yeah.
yeah.
This is the light, this where light is indirect.
Right.
So I was trying to explain in the drawing, the tonal going to the light, put the cross hatch. It's where you see a true texture of the object, and then you get to the light, the brightest part. You just leave your paper, and then you continue to the half tone, because if it's round, line is not sharpest at the edge because it's still round, right? So if it's flat, cut out, yes, you can draw a sharp line, but if its form is round, you have to deal with that gradation there. So that's why they were always putting those two together, and that's the way my mind set for everything I do. I
I love
still,
that
when I
scientific
paint,
approach to drawing. It's
I still
brilliant.
when I paint, I remember every word. Like sometimes when things start, you create something and not working, not working, and then started well. Oh, that's what he was saying. Yeah, right. I remember now. And you remember the words of your teacher, so it's so pleasant.
So, okay. So tone and color both together describe depth. I get
Yes.
that, and I obviously agree with that. But what do you see as the disadvantage of splitting the two apart and mastering tone first and then implementing color to further accentuate the depth? What is the disadvantage of separating those two principles and working on them independently?
I think they when they I don't I wouldn't give I couldn't give you an answer on that, because I'm a product of one thing. I
Right.
just the advantage of constantly evolving those two together. You don't have a space in between. They evolve same time. You
So you see them
understand
as
the
one whole. It's just
Yes.
a whole unified unit. Okay. I got a lot of thinking to do about that. You just kind of rocked my world a little bit.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so you went to that school, you went 4 years. So what, you're 12 years old when you finished?
Yeah.
Okay, then what happened after that?
Well, I was waiting for the college starts about 17. I was my parents always supported what I wanted to do. I had my space in the house where I can set stuff. In fact, father, like sometimes when he will come home, he wanted to know what I've done. He was interested, not forcing. So then I took my tests again, get to the college, the same thing, drawing, painting, composition. And then there were two literature. You write essay, and history. Not art history, sadly, it's history. And then I had the 4 years there, and I finished that, and then I went, took 9 tests, it was required from everybody, to get into the Leningrad Art Academy, which is known as Repin Art Institute.
Oh yeah, we've all heard of that. Yeah.
But that was everybody from the country was coming to there. I mean, to get into the school, it wasn't easiest. It's like if you want to get to Yale here or Harvard in the law school, that was because everybody you know, they wanted that. If you appear to somebody and say, oh, what are you doing? I'm studying at the Repin Art Institute. Look at you will be completely different.
You know anyway, what's fun? You know what's funny about that? My daughter who studies art, and granted, my school's not the Repin school, but I think it's still an interesting comparison. She studying with me at my school, but she hangs out with all these university students at the University of Utah. And every time she tells a university student that she's going to quote unquote art school, they look down at her or make some derogatory comments, or they treat her like she might be stupid or something. It's just interesting the difference in culture. And you're saying, well, granted, this is a Repin school and not the Hein Atelier. So it's this obviously incredibly important, well-respected school. But still, it seems like even if there was something like that in the United States, let's say, I don't know, what's the equivalent? Let's say you go to New York Academy. I don't think that if you said to your friends, I'm going to art school at New York Academy, that they would see that as respectable. They'd be like, well, why aren't you studying law or medicine? So again, it's just another odd cultural difference between the Soviet Union and America.
We also had this thing when we got to the Repin that there's so much history in that particular building and the history of that institution that there was some kind of weight on you, like if you appear somewhere, I do represent this place. I behave. So.
Wow, that's amazing. I wish we had something like that here. I wish we had that kind of culture here when it comes to art. Well, okay, so what did you do for that 5 years though? I mean, from 12 to 17, did you keep up on your drawing and painting?
Yes.
You did, and just in your own personal study?
Yeah, I love it. And then I always will go to visit the teacher. The school was still there.
Okay.
Just show him what I do. And he will say, you know, look at here a little bit in this composition. Maybe you overexpose something. And then at its time when you start to think about certain symbols, and then, you know, when you look at the paintings, there's always hidden message or something, and which was quite popular then because we were, you know, under censorship of the Communist Party, right? So, but you wanted to say something, but you also, if you say it too direct, that's why the hidden message was maybe important in our culture. So it's interesting. And then there are people who read it right away, but they were in the same group. So,
So when you went to the Repin Institute, did you have to go through that whole process where at the end you had to do a complex multi-figure composition? Are they still doing that, or were they doing that at the time?
Yeah. The first year you studied the, you know, the portraits, the still lives. The second year it's torso, the nudes, and then the third year it gets more complicated. You get to the professor, because you write under which main professor. There were 6 main studios. And you pick one, number one. If he didn't pick you, and number two. So I got where I wanted.
Can I just take a minute to recognize the people and companies that make this podcast possible? First, I want to thank you, my patrons. You are absolutely the most important and necessary sponsors of this podcast. Without you, we couldn't keep this thing going. If you love the show and are not yet a patron, please consider helping out. Go to theundrapedartist.com and click on the link Be My Patron on Podbean. And then just pick a monthly amount that fits your budget. What are 4 great podcasts a month worth to you? In my opinion, My sponsor, Rosemary Brushes, makes the best artist brushes available today. They have a huge inventory and are constantly innovating and adding new and interesting brushes to their line. They ship all over the world, and due to their exceptional customer service, you won't wait long to receive your order. To order some brushes for yourself, go to rosemaryandco.com. The Hein Atelier began over 20 years ago in 2002. Due to limited space and high demand, in 2022, I adapted the entire curriculum to an online platform. While on our website and mobile app, students will find hundreds of hours of valuable recorded content, this online atelier is not just a website full of lessons, tutorials, and other resources. In this program, I personally mentor each student toward their artistic goals through weekly Zoom critiques, instruction, and regular in-app communications. To learn more or to sign up, go to heinatelier.com. Lastly, whether you're watching or listening on Apple Podcasts or just listening on another station like Spotify, please consider leaving me a 5-star review. If you watch on YouTube, consider giving me a follow and a thumbs up. These things really help the channel.
So, and then after third year, instead of the plein air, first 2 years were plein air, like, first year they will send you, like, they will send you to the beach in California area, right, to paint strong suns. The second year was like equivalent if you sent to Minnesota, for example. It was beautiful greens, gray greens, so complicated. So third year was you have to copy a great master. Not Cezanne, not Matisse, no. Rembrandt, Leonardo,
right.
Gerber, you know, Holbein, you know, this was. Well, in Hermitage, we have an incredible collection, 28 Rembrandts. And I copied David and Uriah. Mm-hmm. That was a humbling experience. I probably would say I learned certain way to apply the layers on layers. Because I remember I was so satisfied when I started, and I will go happy after first day and the second day. And then you think you've done well, you came back, and your painting is flat compared to Rembrandt's painting. So, And then on and on and on, because Rembrandt painted on, and there are many layers there, right? So there's certain, his paintings like a jewel, it's like precious stone you can look through. So, and you learn, and what was amazing, you learn subtleties. You know, he wasn't a flashy painter. He was about what he painted. And it is a very humbling experience, you know, copying him. But I got my miles out of that, so.
Do you feel like you figured it out? The reason I ask is because I studied Rembrandt. Rembrandt is probably the artist I've studied the most, the one I am really trying to emulate the most, as far as technique goes. But because there's so many layers, I feel like it's really difficult, if not impossible, to know exactly what his approach was. Do you feel like you got pretty close, or you still feel like there's quite a bit of mystery there?
Oh, no, there's always, about Rembrandt, there always will be mystery. And then the thing is that, when you study in the school, there are certain settings you learn, you know, this is the way you set your drawings, this proportions, you start to apply layers, thicker on the light side, thinner on the shadow side, this and that. Rembrandt painted until the moment it will happen. There was no shtick, you know, he wasn't one day painter, you know, so. Mm-hmm. And therefore, sometimes when I see courses where artists share certain skills, it's almost saying people come to learn certain pattern, how to do it fast. Well, the great thing about Rembrandt was, yeah, he was, you know, sanding his painting, you know, polishing with a knife and stuff like that, scraping, then applying again, you know. That's why it is so rich.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely like, Like I said, when I remember this Uriah was standing with his hand on his chest when David is sending off for this guy to die in his battle because he was in love with his David was in love with his wife. So, and every little thing, the way look of Uriah, it's just like he took air in. He knew that his friend is sending him to die. Because David was his friend. But every little thing was there. So, and what was great, because we copied from 7 in the morning until 10, when 10 o'clock museum will open, you have to leave. Because the people will come, they have to see access to the painting you copied, and you wouldn't be a nuisance to walk around. But Monday museum was closed, but you were allowed to copy all day long. And when they knew you, when they finally know you, that you are not, you hear the person sitting beside you. The old lady will say, "Go walk around museum. You will never walk in this museum alone." And it's a different museum. When you are alone, is absolutely incredible. I remember walking through the corridors and the halls of the Hermitage. It was spectacular. It was spectacular.
That sounds like it was magical. I can't even imagine what that'd be
Well, you
like.
named it. I would say that was when I was finishing my school in Leningrad, I wasn't happy that it's done. I love that building. The building is incredible. Catherine the Great commissioned that incredible building based on idea of École des Beaux-Arts in Paris. And we had three libraries. We have two museums in the building. The books there when they will bring you with white gloves, where one of Louis, the French king, gave to Peter the Great. The etchings of the battles of the Alexander the Great, and the book was probably about 5 feet, and you really have to open it. Like, so there were so many treasures there. So yeah, that was.
Unbelievable. That sounds just unbelievable. All right. So, what happened when you graduated? Well, no. Actually, let me back up. I'm curious about that multi-figure painting because multi-figure painting is what I do, and I find it incredibly difficult and frustrating. And sometimes I don't want to do it. I mean, it's just really challenging. So I look at these people at the Repin Institute, and am I saying that right? Is it Institute Academy, Repin Academy? Which is it?
Right now, they call it Art Academy, and then the name of the institution is Repin Institute.
Repin Institute. Okay. So it just blows my mind when they have these students doing these extraordinarily complex multi-figure paintings in just after 4 years of school.
No, it's 5 years of the school, and 6 year is you work with diploma
Oh, but
projects.
still, even 6 years, it's because I just still, to this day, after 22 years of painting, find multi-figure painting really complex. And I'm curious what, if there's anything about multi-figure painting that they teach that simplifies the process. Are they focusing on it a lot, or are these students just putting this stuff together just intuitively? They are.
In fact, I'll tell you that that was from the school when I was a kid. He was going through the whole thing. We were doing the
Even
same.
from 8 to 12, you're talking about multi-figure painting. Wow.
And then, of course, you are more amateur in the beginning, because
Well,
the
yeah.
concept of the multi-figure composition is to see as a whole grouping. Like a spot. And then like, for example, yeah, we have five hands, but this is already a different look, right? It's the same. So when you have the multi-figure composition, my fingers are not all the same, right? Right now, right? Like this, they are. So the whole thing is You see, and that's I think Italians actually were the one of the first called macchiaioli. Direction, it's macchia, it's a spot. You see it as a shape. So that's how you see when the painting attracts you. That's an idea. Painting should attract you from the distance. Anyway, it means that you see a shape more, and then the definition. When you come close to the painting, that's where your skills should be saying, "Oh, that's how it made." There's capacity in everything. Every stage of you approaching the painting have to have certain value in that for you to be drawn.
So, correct me if I'm understanding this wrong, but I think what you're saying is something that I've learned, and I'm still pushing myself to do better because I find it, this is part of what I find difficult, this whole spot idea, but maybe I'm misunderstanding you. Let me know if I am. But the incorrect thing, the opposite of seeing it as a shape or a spot, would be to just narrate figures independently to tell a story. Say, I want you doing this because you're this character, and I want you doing this because you're this character, as opposed to saying, okay, what is the shape of these two characters
Yes.
as one unified whole?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so I made that mistake, and I still afraid I make that mistake too often, where I'm focused too much on directing the characters instead of designing the shapes. And so that's what you're saying they focused on, less on directing the characters, more on designing the shapes.
Yes. Yeah. And then the shape in the relation, what language is your shape is bringing, why you're putting this in the shadow and bringing that into the light, for example. But yeah, the first comes the shape, like macchia. In fact, in Pitti Palace there's a great collection called Macchiaioli collection. You see what they were doing. And then our teachers were always saying, spot. You create the spot. It's not strong. It doesn't work right now. So, and you have hours of discussing, and and then you bring the first you bring your pencil drawings, like the soft pencil drawings, like the and they are size maybe 3 by 5 inches, 3 by 3. Then you increase in the bigger size. Then you do with the color. And we also had that. Two compositions a semester. Every semester we had the they will give you a title and you have to execute something to that title.
Really?
Yeah.
That
And
sounds
the
fun.
second and sec and that would be a tonal. You have to make it tonal. You can use oil paints or charcoal, whatever you want.
But no color.
No colors. And you can do in color variation on that if you want to, but the tonal was important. That's but then the free composition every semester was whatever you want. And that's you create in color the way you
Did
paint.
you have certain criteria, like we need at least three figures, or you need to include some still life elements or landscape or anything like that?
Free composition was totally free. It can be one figure but composed with something or multi-figurative is up to you. Yeah, but the one which is the tonal was yeah. It was they will have assignments, like you have to have several figures there.
Man, I gotta admit, I'm a little bit envious of your history. It's pretty amazing.
If I'll tell you one thing, one you just get lucky sometimes. Now imagine if we have a teachers, and every teacher you have is level Andrew Wyeth. I mean, those guys are working. Like we sometimes sit with Melissa and team, our son, I'm like, you didn't know those people. It's just luck, you because they were giants. I literally were in awe. You will just walk in the corridor and you see that professor walking in the corridor, You just stop there, just wait for him to pass, just because you are so mesmerized. And I mean, and then you go. And what was great, you know, there was a fall and winter exhibitions of the Art Union. We have a beautiful Art Union in Leningrad. Well, let's call it St. Petersburg. It's St. Petersburg right now. It will be easier to talk about. And then you see what they've done during that year. They convinced you to be in awe of them by what they've done. And I remember when I got my drawing in the second year in Academy, and there was a special praise written under my work. There was, I don't know what you will call it in US. That changed the whole attitude of is it you who made that drawing? Yeah. Come on, guy. Come on, let's have a coffee, you know, or something. Because you
You
actually
must have been
achieved.
on cloud nine when that happened.
Yeah, it's cloud nine. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. And the
That's amazing.
same with professors. They would say, is it your drawing? Yeah. Not too bad. Not too bad. That's keep going. So.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah, I've definitely met people where I'm just in awe. Many people, I mean, a lot of my guests, yourself, like they're m my guests are those people. But I imagine it's so much different when you're just a hungry student that is just barely stepping into this magical world and these incredible masters are in your presence on a daily basis. It's got to be.
And you have about 40 students in your own year. That year, every painting faculty had 40 students. Sculpture 12. Graphic department had about 12. So you have to prove yourself among them, and they want to show you how great they are. So, but
So it's
then
pretty competitive.
very competitive, and then and you learn from each other so much. You slow down a little, and you are gone. So it was, yeah, but everything was there for us, you know. The studios were great. You will be given art supplies 3 times a year, and you know, and then you know, it was I when I think about that, I just got lucky in time a little bit. And the people around, when professors will invite you to their house to have a tea with them, and you know, the meeting their families and stuff, so it was incredible.
You know, your work, and we're going to pull your work up in a minute, but your work has a little bit of a Russian, what I would say is a Russian quality to it, but not as much as most. I mean, typically, I could pick out a Russian artist like that. Like, there's a look that Russian artists have, which is a very desirable look that many of us Americans wish we had. Why is that? Are the teachers teaching you to paint in a certain way, or is it just because there are these greats and everyone wants to be like them, so the students just tend to emulate their teachers? Or maybe you don't even recognize this look of a Russian artist.
I will pick if I see, probably, but if you ask me to define,
Yeah, it's hard to define it.
I will have a hard time. I never thought that you know, and how to define stuff like that. You do things and then somebody else explain to you what you've done.
I know. I don't think yours has it as much as most. And I can't define it, but so you do agree though that you could even pick out a Russian artist many a time.
I would say if you look, the most important things I learn is certain gradations, what we call subtleties here. It's, I think, where my school was one of the best. Like, for example, I saw several studios and then private schools, and but it's the painting still was a little bit more tonal to me. But what was great about our school, we have a model, for example, and then there's a red background. Well, things change in the color of your body when you have a red background. But then almost the same thing they will put the gray background. But you have to deal with it, those changes, and they will grill you on that. Absolutely, like you made up this color. You think you know the color of the skin. Is that there is no such a thing as a skin tone. It's what, how much light is there? What is a background? If it's gray, strong green, you know, or so they were playing all of that. So I would say that was probably the, and it's important to put somebody in uncomfortable situation. Like I was, and a plein air. Plein air is absolutely, it's crucial. And I do it every year. When certain season comes, I want to get out and do something because it does help me with my artwork and the painting later on.
The other thing I think, though, is there's a boldness to many Russian painters where there's often they paint thick and it feels confident, and it's like they'll put the brush stroke down and just leave it because they just know exactly where it's going to go. There's certain, like you said, it's really hard to define. I'm actually, as you're talking, I'm trying to find a few Russian painters on Instagram, and I'm just not finding them right now. But I'm really curious about that. But I if I had to define it, it would be that confidence, that boldness and confidence in the brush stroke. And you're not where many artists kind of tickle the strokes and massage them, and whereas Russians just are like, bam, there it is, like make it happen.
Well, I will take you aside a little bit. You remember how Bam was Sergeant and how Zorn is? It means that the school was there. You don't put brushstroke confidently if you don't know where it should be. It all sits in the drawing.
That's true. I mean, it's something that's been around a long time, but Russians have hung on to it quite well. So, all right, so that's a good segue. Let's go ahead and pull up your work now here. What do you think is the best way to look at your work? Would it be through Instagram or through your website?
Maybe, you know, the Instagram is one thing. Website probably will be easiest to look
Okay, all
at.
right, let's do that then. All right, so here's your
That's Martha.
portfolio. Gosh, yeah, see that? This is what I mean by the boldness, though.
Thank you. This is Laura.
This is this
Pastel.
pastel?
Yes.
Holy crap, man, you make pastel look like oil paint.
This is oil. That's the whole point. Because it's there's a few tricks you're doing.
All right, what's the best way? Let me see. Let's go with figurative. Start with that because I love figurative. Maybe you could talk about the spot when you're looking at some of your multi-figures here. Can I zoom in on that? Is it possible to zoom in? No, I'm not being able to zoom in on that. Shoot, bummer. Well, when you were designing this is extraordinary, by the way. Oh my gosh. It's so complex. And somehow you make the figures all work together so beautifully. So
Well,
tell me about that principle of the spot. What were you thinking about when you were designing the shapes on this?
so you create the instance to the composition, but for example, like the clouds are also a continuation of relationship with everything else, like how the birds are flying out of the shoulder, right? It creates, it doesn't, like the figure don't exist independently as a shape. They are in the space. So that's the concept. So if you think about, like, for example, if we go to abstract compositions, like for example, Vasily Kandinsky, right? Draws a line diagonally up, then immediately he intersects it. That's the principle of composition. You always kind of keep it in rotation, but at the same time, when you see the nets and the bodies, they are all together, but they're interconnected with the whatever shapes of the boats you see. And then, you know, the when two figures together, you know, you put one separately, give the space, then, you know, it's, but they all interlock. Like, for example, beside in the purple sky, it's how the birds and everything they flew out of that particular shape of the people are standing all together. So it will be, if I had like whatever points to show, it will be a little easier to explain.
Yeah, I wish you, I could give you that power. If you want to direct me around, I'm happy to point a little bit. But
yeah. When you go, you enter. You know, the first diagonals of the shape of the boat bring you in, but they continue to the body standing on the left, you know, and then jump down diagonally and then bring you horizontally through this boat to those two figures, and then rotation goes again. So that was a shape.
Okay. Yeah, and I noticed that your birds, many of the birds sort of disappear into the clouds.
Yeah, because then sometimes they appear, sometimes disappear. That's the... They're becoming, you know, if we make the things atonal, that's why it was important to make a tonal composition in the school. It's when it defines the shapes.
Right. Because, if you had all of these birds pronounced against the background, it would be an extraordinarily busy composition, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But you've managed to have a lot of stuff happening. But by, tell me if you did this on purpose, but by making the birds the same value as the background or as the sky, you subdue that complexity and make it much easier to rest your eye.
Yeah. Because sometimes the object appears and disappears in the space.
Yeah.
So the wings, if you have those the dark side of the windows, wings, you can show them appearing, and the beak and stuff like that, you know, or whatever they. But you where you need it, you make that strong shape because you needed the spot to continue. And when you don't need it, you let it melt into the space. So, and that's the way I see it in the niche also.
Okay, just to be clear, when you say spot, is spot just synonymous with shape, or is there something more significant about the term spot that I'm missing?
But is it shape, the like I said, if you make it black and white, all the darks, you will see they are continuously united.
Okay, so the spot would be that one unified shape.
Yes.
That is again being the dark shape against the light shape, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Okay. But in this, you've got lots of grays, though. So are you initially...
The spot creates... Like, for example, if you accidentally spill your coffee on your napkin, it just spreads, right?
Right.
It's more congested in one area and then connected to some areas in different... value also. So yeah.
Oh, that's a brilliant analogy.
But when you want to zoom somebody in, you break it more in the smaller shapes and you bring more contrast to that area. That was well explained by Kandinsky and Malevich also. So those two things exist together. So yeah. So you play with idea where you want to zoom, and then you break it. If you want to zoom somebody into a certain area, you make the shape smaller, 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 and more contrasty. And then when you let it go, and then, you know, you have a certain element moving you around also. And again, when you find the second place, you break it more again.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. Oh my gosh, I just occurred to me or just noticed how big this is. That's 14 feet long.
Yeah.
Where did this end up going?
This is in a gallery in San Agustin, Florida, Cather & Cather.
Oh my gosh. That is huge. Especially for a horizontal. There's not a lot of walls that wide.
You're right.
Holy moly. I paint pretty big, but I tend to paint more vertical for that reason. It's a lot harder to find a 14 foot long wall. It's a lot easier to find a 14 foot tall wall.
I go often to Morocco, and then the port scenes, and then here in Maine also. That is my favorite thing to do. So
so how do you put these together? As far as the craftsmanship of the piece from beginning to end, what kind of reference are you using? Is it from life, from photos, from drawings, from imagination? I mean, what are you, how are you putting this complex thing together?
All of those, all of the, that, the big one is, in fact, I never made the study for that one. I actually started right on the canvas. There are lots of changes. If one ever made the X-ray, you'll see there's a bunch of layers there. So I tried, like in old times, to do some studies for that, but I learned that later on, study have to be study of its own. Because when you start to paint the big painting, it's also a study. And
And it doesn't translate. Haven't you found that when you do a little study and then you blow it up,
yes,
all of
it
a sudden
changes.
these little spaces are too big and they need to be dealt
Yes,
with?
exactly. Is that the whole, you just nailed it. That was exactly a point. When I got to that point, I realized I can make lineal things like quickly on like maybe three by six quick lineal study. This is the way I want this grouping, and then I stretch canvas and I go ahead, start. And then sometime I think this is the way the head should be, and like the fisherman on the left, I changed a bunch of times the position of the hands, and then
This one
so
here.
on. Yeah.
Okay.
It so
And so are you using photo reference?
I try not to, but I do sometimes. For example, when you see the girl in the boat,
The girl.
no, it's a, the
Oh, right
I
here, right here.
yeah. She was my model in Russia, and I did I did photograph her, and then after the moment when I laid out everything, I intentionally take away everything and then continue, because I start to paint thinking how one will look in the space, because the camera has its own focus and it's more tonal. So I try to not to.
You gotta paint on your own.
The composition on the right, the procession in Spain,
That
that
looks
was
very Russian, by the way. This is what I mean by Russian. See
yeah.
these big bold marks. They say so much and there's so little there. That's
Yeah,
Russian to me.
this was my demo at the Oil Painters America. I made this demo there. So
That's a demo.
yeah, that was that one I did. We had a show in Charleston in Reinhardt Gallery.
You did an almost 5 foot wide demo.
Yeah, but I had two sessions,
Two sessions of
and
how long?
they were 2.5 hours
This
each.
is a
But then
five-hour painting.
no, just a second. But then I had that. There was a day in between, so I painted the whole day that day in between, and I told them. So when I started, this is what I've done, and then I said I will paint in between, and then the third day I will do the finish. Yeah, but I was also running like a sprinter, you know.
Holy
In
moly.
yeah, that was a demo. Yes.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
Man, even for just 2 days of painting, that's incredible. Okay, so again, I want to go back to this one. I just absolutely love this painting.
Thank
I
you.
love it for a lot of reasons. One, composition. I love the pastel palette in it. I love how complex it is, and somehow you made it work because as a multi-figure painter, I know how hard that is. But I just really want to know how you put that together. So you're saying you'd work from life on these figures?
From what?
From life on the figures in the boats and
Ah,
stuff?
this is in my studio. This is in my studio. I it's from my imagination, like from my memories, let's say this way.
You did this all from imagination.
Yes, but I actually when I was in the port, I do studies of the boats, and then sometimes there are people in the birds and stuff. I love to paint seagulls, and then but yes, but when you come home, and then you just remember that, and I was trying to imitate what I saw
Oh
there.
gosh, yeah, you're way ahead of me. I could never do this from memory. That's insanity.
But the whole thing of what I, because when you are spend so much time in the port like that particular one in Essaouira, Morocco, there's a time of a certain like peace. I wanted to show that the calmness and peace. You know, those guys are doing the job, and you know, if you try to lift those nets and stuff, move stuff, they are preparing. This is doing you hear the boats are hitting each other like bok 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 with the sound of that. Birds are flying by. So, but they like it's their life. You know, somebody start a cigarette smoking, and they just talk to each other. Everything is it's just a preparation. So I was just like, wow. So
Yeah,
and
but how
then
can you
inspired.
retain all this information? I'm looking at all these slats in the boats and the chipping paint and the water texture and the perspective on the boats and
I have done.
even the shapes of the birds. How do you know birds so well? I can't imagine having my brain able to do that.
Once I was at I think it's called Farnsworth Museum or Rockland. I think it's Rockland, yeah. There was an exhibition of called Seven Deadly Sins by Jamie
I
Wyatt.
saw that it came to Salt Lake. That was an amazing exhibition. Yeah, all the seagulls.
Yes,
Yeah.
and Jamie Wyatt is the one when I so yeah, that's the way you paint those birds. So he's incredible.
Man, so I did a painting where there were a lot of pigeons in it. And I literally had my assistants hold the pigeons for me. And lit them and stuff because if, for me, I would find it very difficult to get the convincing lighting and everything else without
I do.
reference.
I do. I do photograph and you know. I put it in my iPhoto and stuff. But I learned later on. It's better to have it somewhere in the distance, maybe to the life size, but not really to kind of like copying exactly because
Okay. So
I
you
still.
have references, obviously. Okay, I get that. So you're not copying a reference, but you do have some resource, some source material to at least say this is what a boat looks like. This is what
Oh
the
yeah, but
Okay.
now time probably wouldn't be even necessary because I've done it so much that
Yeah, yeah.
if I will see a new type boat, those in the Moroccan ones I know pretty well from Essaouira.
Yeah.
If I will go like lobstermen boat and stuff, but that I also done enough so.
That's amazing, man. Amazing. So tell me about this one. Is this a study? Oh
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a.
study for time for a time to rest. Yeah, of course.
That one is a pastel, and this is a study for the. And there's a bigger painting, and you will see how much that changed.
Is it on this feed
Go
here?
somewhere
Oh,
there.
right here.
There's another. No. That's another one. That's also pastel.
Yeah, but that's the same
There's.
title, Time to Rest. Wait, so
So.
that's not the study for that?
No. There's somewhere another painting of the same size like that big one. Let's see if it all appears somewhere. Oh, that's Denny.
No, I don't see it. I think that's it. Let's pull up your Instagram. Is it on your Instagram?
No, I would say if you go to the Carter and Carter, they probably have it.
Carter and Carter. Wait, let me see. So there's probably a link to that on your website here, right?
Probably.
Carter and Carter. Okay.
Let's scroll. Those are recent studies.
He's, yeah, wait, they have way more work than you have on your website, man. You got to update your website. Holy moly, look at all this work. Dude,
Other
you are
both.
prolific.
Well, that's what I do every day.
Holy moly, is this it? Wait.
No. The one right there, on your diagonally to the left, down, this one. This
Okay.
is also 14 feet, yeah.
14 feet. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, that one, I told you that I did the study, but you will see how many changes that after all, you know, you, because you have to say this is also a study, only in a bigger size.
Oh, I wish we could make that bigger. Wait,
Ah,
click to
okay.
expand. Oh, there we go. Okay. Wow, your color palette's gorgeous. I love your purple is one of my favorite colors, and you tend to paint a lot of purple.
Yeah. I don't use a limited palette.
No, you don't. Okay, yeah, see, there's that Russian look. That's what I'm talking about. Bold. Just
It started was I started a long time the series called Weathered People, and it changed into that. They are weathered, you know. So that's why maybe I love to paint fishermen so much.
I love all the layers. So you're thinking a little bit like Rembrandt, maybe not as much, not as thin. I feel like you're more liberal with paint throughout the value range than Rembrandt might have been, at least early in his career.
But
But
Jeff, imagine if Rembrandt has had our information right now with all turquoise, the
of that,
quinacridone,
yeah, exactly.
you just name it, he probably would have went nuts and we would have been drawing again. So
Yeah. But what I was going to say though is you are thinking in terms of lots of layers. It looks like you're doing what he did and just painting until you're satisfied rather than this formulaic approach that
yeah,
you
sometimes
described.
you because sometimes you start study with the tilt of the head and stuff, and that, no, that it's not, and then you change it again. So
Yeah, those are. All right, I think we need to be on this website. This is the way to go right here because they've got a lot of your work.
they are great gallery. I admire them. They do a great job for us, so we have a good relationship.
So there's a
And
lot of studies for this particular painting.
that's a pencil study for that. You actually see right now the and then how I was trying to group it together, as you know, with the one head appears like the back of the one head, and then second, and sometimes a peak for and person can be in between, so it's, and the in real life people don't posing, sometimes is those moments in between, like you are walking by, is important for me.
Yeah, you want more of a candid,
Yeah,
unpredictable look.
if you see the composition with everybody is looking at you at three quarters, it's not three.
Yeah, that would be a little amateur, huh? All right, let's see. Sorry, I'm a little slow because I'm figuring out how to navigate their website here. You could tell that you're a Jamie Wyeth fan. You paint a lot of seagulls, but you do it in a very different way. You got your own thing going.
This is interesting that this started as etching. It's
Etching.
this.
You do etching too?
Yes, I this is etching, by the way. Not that particular one. And I finished the edition, and that copper plate was there, and I'm thinking, well, drawing already engraved there, so I might as well to put the color in. So that's what I did with
Is it
the.
watercolor? What is
No,
that?
it's oil. It's oil.
Oh, okay. So you put oil over an etching?
Yes, it's a copper plate. This is copper.
Oh, you just painted right on the copper plate.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm assuming you already got your whole series, your etching, your whole edition
Yeah,
finished.
I had a whole edition done, and I'm thinking it's honest to keep it.
Dude, that's brilliant. And then
Thank you.
the person who buys it has kind of a they get two for one deal there, a painting
Yes.
and the plate. That's pretty sick. All right, let's see. You said you do etching. Where can I see one of your etchings?
Don't know if they are there. I don't say, I don't know.
Man, yeah, let's see if there's anything that you like that you want to look at. Oh, here's a different version of the same group. Wow, that's really different. The boats are just all parallel. Same
And
characters, though.
this year I went to Morocco a few months ago, and that port changed a little. They put a little bit more like the industrial stuff which needed to be support landings and stuff, so it's even more busy right now, so more serious. I'm right now there's a bunch of paintings in progress about that port.
But you got the same dude in it. So is that a guy that just works there, or is this a guy out of your imagination?
They're all from imagination, but the looks are, if you will get there, you will think this is probably that guy because I, you know, somebody influences you in their particular
Yeah.
look that I try to imitate.
All right, let's see. I apologize to the audience for being a little bit slow.
If you scroll up, I'm starting a series called Veritas, and let's see,
This
see
way?
up, up. That one, I don't know if this she's there. Just a second. Oh, that one is the in the boat. I was pleased that the last year. This was a one I've done called Girl from the Other Side. The idea is that because the we travel so much with Melissa, and you know the subjects you know come to you, and I got from this guy in Chattanooga who traveled to Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, all those smaller countries, less known than Iran, and incredible pattern. And to me, the hours of human beings spent making such a precious thing. But again, it's this ethnic, certain ethnic look, which we are slowly all losing. We're kind of morphing in something like tennis shoes and stuff. So and then people say, oh, they come here, you know, but they come with certain gifts, like who they are. They're enriching us, in fact, right? You know, those immigrants, you know, whatever people say, well, I'm also immigrant, you know, so maybe that's why. And I started a series called Girl from the Other Side. And it will be golden series also, but it's all about the certain things which people in different parts of the world do, and they do it so beautifully, right? In like yesterday, I was watching, day before yesterday, I was watching this Shogun movie, and I'm telling you, the series, the costumes or the kimonos were just killing me, you know. Like somehow I will find it into my painting. So this, and this is the idea of accepted. It's different, but it's beautiful. So I start series like that.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous portrait.
Thank you.
So, who posed for this, or is this also out of imagination?
Yeah, she did change. I go and I started with this face actually, and then rest I added later on. I do have that outfit. I put several pillows to combine the pose. Like for the folds,
Right.
I did life, but the birds and stuff. I was just thinking, you know, that she arrives something where there is no sea, right? It's her new place, and then you know she never saw seagulls. Or that this is new. She will land right now into something new. But
Yeah,
she,
that's beautiful.
thank you. And then you probably can tell that the Rembrandt was influencing me there, so I was
In the
having this.
face in particular, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then you got this bullfighter series.
Yeah, I went to several bullfights, probably maybe my last one. It's and there's a certain strange beauty in there.
You didn't see that when it was small. That's pretty dynamic.
So we were told you were telling me what an idea and stuff like that. Son comes down from his studio. He's on the second floor and said, "Hey guys, would you like to watch the Love, Death, and Robots?" You know, and there's one episode was called Hibaro. Have you seen that?
No.
Phew. That was influence in a certain way approaching certain things in this painting. I will have so many paintings that you know different things influences you, but you know the that industry also produces so many beautiful things. So it's not that was there. The Hibaro is a deaf knight. The way that 15 minutes episode was filmed was zooming on certain things which like exaggerated. So this is my Hibaro series. No, it's not Hibaro series. I influence of Hibaro.
Right. I got you.
I will recommend you to see that.
Yeah, I'm gonna look that up for for sure. Okay, yeah, man, there's just so much to look at. I don't even know where to go. All
Those are
right, so the
life
watercolor,
studies.
is that watercolor?
Watercolor, yes, and that one also watercolor above that. So, this is a Moroccan port. Yeah, those the concrete things to break the waves when the huge storm is coming.
Is that plein air?
Plein air, yes.
There's a lot of line work back here. Are you doing that with a brush or a fountain pen or something or what?
No, it's a brush. It's a brush. Yeah.
Just a fine brush.
That's usually like a 2.5, 3 hour study.
See, I have no experience with watercolor. I'm a little intimidated by it. It seems really, really frustrating because if you screw up, you're toast.
Next one, no, next two also watercolors, but they are studio watercolors.
This one's watercolor though, right? Yeah.
Yeah. This is
Yeah.
studio.
Man, that's something else. That is so pretty.
Thank you.
So studio water, okay. So when you do a studio watercolor like this, are you doing a pretty elaborate drawing ahead of time to get make to make sure you have everything in the right place?
Not really.
No.
Sometimes I would say set the first couple of birds and then I go after that. Yeah.
Holy moly, dude. You're blowing my mind.
Oh, but you if you the watercolor becomes more complicated and hard if you use too much water right away.
Okay.
You have to know which area you're moving. If you get to certain details, you just slow down with how much amount of water you take, and you have more control. And then you want to get loose, then you get more water and a bigger brush, and so I have a range of things. So
Okay,
and.
I got to look at that again now that you said that. Yeah. Yeah, so back in here, you're probably painting a lot drier.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can like define it, and then if it's too harsh, you can run over that with water with color, and then they will just kind of melt it into also. So there is a way of diffusing stuff.
Do you have a favorite watercolor paper?
Arches,
Just
thicker one is better.
thicker one? Okay.
Yeah, I like 400, 600. That will be my favorite.
Okay. I just asked because if I ever want to try it, I always like to know what the great
Oh,
watercolors they're using.
ashes, cold press is good stuff.
Okay. All right. Oh man, this one's so pretty.
Windsor Newton watercolors will be, I will recommend. Yeah, they are one of the
Winsor
best.
Newton? Really? Okay.
Incredible.
That's good to know.
This painting took about maybe 10 years because it was changing so much. And at the end, I kept it like that.
Look at that thick paint right there.
Yeah.
Piling it on. 10 years. That's insane. You
I
just.
didn't paint it every day 10 years, but
Well, of
like
course not. Yeah.
I even exhibited in different stages, but then last time I just say, okay, this is what I want. I took a knife and ran over that a few times, and there were a bunch of figures buried in here. There was one figure sitting in the boat
Oh, boat. I
on
didn't even
the
notice the boat. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but in the right corner, in the right corner bottom, if you see a little bit of blues coming, there was another figure right there.
It looks like there was a boat right here.
There was a boat there.
Oh,
There was
no kidding.
a person in the boat, and there were no birds. But then I took the boat and the girl away and put the birds in the middle. That
Huh.
I always think needed.
Yeah, congrats on sticking with that one. I probably would have given up after,
I have a
maybe
bunch
5 years.
like that. I have a bunch like that.
Do you really? So you paint big a lot and you haven't found it and I mean, obviously you're making sales, you seem to be doing pretty well. So the scale hasn't hurt you at all.
No, but
Yeah.
it's some paintings will ask you like this, I want to be big, and then you go. So I made the oil painting of this, but almost full body, and
This one's
it's like.
pastel.
This is pastel, right? Because I have a good collection of the pastel. I start with Rembrandt and then move to the Sennelier and then Unison, I think that one. The handmade, very soft. You said when it looks like oil, I do mix them on top of the paper, and then I spray with a fixative in between, and that probably has about maybe five, six layers, probably. and that can create the depth. So you.
Oh man, I want to try pastel
Oh,
as
it's
well.
an amazing medium.
Yeah.
Immediate.
Do you do anything? Do you concern yourself with breathing it? Or do you do anything like with ventilation or mass or anything like that? Or you don't worry about
It's not a bad idea, but I don't.
it? I was just curious because I've heard a lot of horror stories, but yeah. Okay, it's all right. Let me see. I'll look at a couple more here. There's just so many. I don't know even where to start. Yeah, you're very prolific. How long have you been painting?
Me?
Yeah, you've been painting since you're 7. I guess what I'm asking you is when were you born? How old are you?
I'm 64 right now.
64. Okay. So you've been painting for 50, what is it, 57 years? Wild man, that's a long time. Yeah, this is great. Is this an actual location?
Yes, this actually is. I will move to a different location right now for
Okay,
a
no
second.
problem.
This is actually Maine, called Frenchboro, Maine. Sorry, I'm moving. That is my favorite island, I'm telling you this. This is many years, I would say 90, no, probably 2000, we went there first time. We have a friends, they have a house in that island, which there are no grocery stores, no coffee place, no restaurants. It's a lobsterman, you and people who has a who have summer houses. So Frenchboro, this I love. My favorite ocean is the Northern Ocean. It's like tarnished silver, you know. It's rich. It has a depth, you know. And all those the lobstermen's life, you know, they put their traps, and to me it was just the symphony, you know, to play with. So
Is that what this is? These are lobster traps? Okay. I was wondering what that was. Yeah.
And it's
So
so weathered, so weathered. It's
you do portraits, you do multi-figure, you do single figure, you even do still life. What is your favorite thing to paint?
Still life, probably I don't do that much. No,
No, it
there
doesn't
was a
seem like you do very many.
no. I do sculpt also. I love to sculpt.
Okay, yeah, I noticed that. Let's look at some of those.
I made like four seasons for our city here in Chattanooga. I don't know if they are there.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where I saw your sculptures. Now, oh, well, you also do the pottery.
Well, somebody does the shape for me, and then I do graffito.
You're designing the exterior. Yeah, that's
This is
beautiful.
in my studio.
So, yeah, where can I see your sculpture? Would it be on your website? Let's see,
On the
portfolio.
website, on my website, there will be several images of
Would
the
it be under public art?
public art. Yes.
So,
This is a chapel we did for Erlanger Hospital on your right. This is in my courtyard. I did the mosaic for myself.
no kidding.
But on the right of that, this is a chapel we did with my son.
Your son's
This
an
is,
artist as well?
yes, son and my wife. And this is a chapel in the hospital here in Chattanooga. Let's see, there should
Wow,
be sculptures.
that's incredible.
Oh yeah,
Ah, there we go.
they are my sculptures. My girls.
Those are gorgeous. Oh,
Thank
man.
you.
Yeah, no, I
They
hadn't seen
are
anything like that.
9 feet sculptures entering the Market Street Bridge.
Holy moly, man. Yeah, I didn't know you did that kind of sculpture, like that scale.
And this is my studio in Spain.
Wait, do you go back and forth from America to Spain?
I live about 5, 6 months in Spain and 5, 6 months here.
So why did you, I never did ask you, why did you come to America and how did you end up in Spain and America?
Well, thank you that I met my great friend Melissa in art school in academy when I was graduating.
Mm-hmm.
She was only American. She, in fact, the second American to study in that school after James Whistler. So Melissa came and we met there and became friends. She invited me to the United States. And later on, when I arrived to the United States, August 6, 1991, a few months later, the Soviet Union disintegrated. I had no passport, no documents to travel with anywhere. So I was locked in this country, so for good.
How did you feel about that? Are you glad to be here? Or?
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be here. And then I have a, we are, Melissa is my wife and then the best friend. So it's, and
that's
and
awesome.
Great artist also. So we do influence. We critique each other at least once a week. You know, we get together, Timur, our son, Melissa and I, and then we just like honest critique, you know, not, you know, even if you feel like uncomfortable, you have to take it. So,
Well, and I've been communicating with her. So she's obviously really helpful in the business side of things too, because
Been
my, she's been the middle person through our communication. Yeah. So I got to look her up. I tell her, I apologize. I didn't even realize she was an artist. I got to look her up.
Oh, well, she has her own world. It's Melissa's.
Okay. I'll look her up after we're done here.
Do you know the artwork of, this is what we did for the school with Timur, the it's a Baylor school here.
Wow. Hey, you did a religious painting.
Yeah, that was a commissions which helped me a lot in the beginning. College Day Church and the St. Peter Episcopal.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I do.
Those were commissions, yeah.
Yeah, man, dude, yeah, you've got a diverse portfolio too. I mean, everything from mosaics, sculpture, etching, oil painting, watercolor, pastel. How do you know what to do in the morning? What do you do? You get up and you just toss a coin or what? I guess it would be like a 17-sided coin though.
Yeah, I have a our mornings we get good coffee, we have a you know, and then just sit and think about that and talk, and then we get to the easels, and then that's our
and
life.
You both paint every day?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man. That's pretty awesome. And what exactly
you also check our son Timur, do you know?
Let's just look him up right now. I'm just curious. All right, so what's your wife's full name?
Melissa Heffernan, 2F.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah.
I don't want to give her too much of a stage because I may have her on the show, but let's see.
Yeah.
I gotta look into her. That's awesome, man. That's what a great companionship you guys have.
Yeah.
And then what about your son?
His name Timur, Timur. And the last name like mine, Akhrier. Yeah, that's him.
Let's see landscapes. Oh, those are good too. Oh, I can see the influence. And how old is he?
He's 40 now, exactly 40.
Okay, I'll look into these guys. This is awesome. What a team you guys have got there.
Yeah, I love my team. It's
amazing.
Good team.
Three people in the same house. Although I'm sure he moved out by now, your son, or is he still?
No. We bought the old bank building and renovated for. We have our floor. He has his floor on the second floor. He has his own studio and apartment there. So
no kidding.
And when we leave to Spain, he takes care of everything here. So for us, we feel comfortable.
And what city do you live in?
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Chattanooga. Okay. And this bank building, is it like on Main Street somewhere in Chattanooga?
Rossville Boulevard. It was old. And then it's pretty huge in size gives us the opportunities we needed. So
That's
we needed
amazing. That's awesome. All right. So I wanted to ask you too, why did you end up going to Spain of all places?
So we travel a lot, and I remember first time we went to Morocco, we loved it so much, we almost moved there.
Really?
And then I was thinking, well, on the other side of the Mediterranean is Spain. And I said, Melissa, why don't you go check it out? And she find that place for us. And we moved, we wanted to move to something new with interesting culture. We had the concepts. We wrote 10 things, like climate, good food, small town, close proximity to museums we need. And we find that she find this old town, their culture. So that's where flamenco and bullfights and come.
Man, that's so awesome. I'm jealous. You've got the life. You definitely do.
We love that place. And then here you see the things that we become friends with family near Bergamo. It's their villa. We stay there often when we go. This is my from Venetian trip. Those are life studies, yeah.
Wow.
In watercolor. Those are watercolors
Yeah.
from Venice.
Wow. Okay. So I got one final question for you before we close here. And that is, if you had one piece of advice that you would give an aspiring artist, what would it be?
Travel as much you can and do more that you don't feel comfortable with.
You mean push yourself past your
When you
comfort zone.
feel comfortable. There's one advice I was given a long time ago by the guy who was a pool shark. I love to play pool sometimes, and he says, "The shot the pool sharks are making more often when they don't play anybody is one they are the worst in doing. So you practice most uncomfortable shot. So that go where the people are. If you feel shy, you have to break it. If it's uncomfortable, if it's windy, you'll break it. But when you get to your studio, you will feel so comfortable, everything else will be easy."
Yeah, you know what? And that goes all the way back to when you were 7 or 8, and your art school's philosophy was throw you right into the hardest medium of watercolor because then oil painting will be easy. Good life lesson. Yeah. Well, Dowd, it's been an inspiration. I mean, I've loved your work for a while, but now getting to know you makes me like it even more. It's incredible. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I hope we'll meet one day.
I hope so too. That would be amazing. Thanks for tuning in to the Undraped Artist Podcast. If you enjoyed it, subscribe. And if you could, leave a comment or review. That really helps the channel. Please share the show with your friends, and if you're feeling generous, consider a monthly donation at theundrapedartist.com. Thanks again for watching. We'll see you next week.